Support for this episode of the podcast comes from our patrons at Patreon. Head to patreon.com/chasingearhart to join the chase and become a patron today. On the morning of July 2nd, 1937, Amelia Earhart and her navigator, Fred Noonan, disappeared over the Pacific Ocean without a trace. 80 years later, all over the world, lie scattered pieces of their puzzle, waiting to be put together. Welcome to the Chasing Earhart Podcast. We've spoken to a lot of guests on this show in the first 31 episodes. We've spoken with researchers, authors, historians, and experts in aviation and aerospace. However, there is one area that has eluded us thus far: family. While we've spoken to a lot of the extended families of Amelia Earhart, Fred Noonan, and George Putnam, we've never had the opportunity to have them as a Chasing Earhart Project guest. Until now. Amy Kleppner is the daughter of Muriel Earhart and the niece of Amelia Earhart. She's an educator, writer, and adventurer. I suppose being an adventurer just runs in the family. On the 32nd episode of the Chasing Earhart Podcast, Amy joins us via Zoom from her home in Vermont to discuss the impact and legacy of her mother Muriel and her aunt Amelia in one of the most special interviews that we've ever conducted. With me now on the Chasing Earhart Podcast is someone very important to us as a team, and it's someone that we're very honored and privileged to have with us, and that is Amy Kleppner. Amy, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to sit down with us and be a guest on the show. We really appreciate it. So can we start this interview off by having you tell us a little bit about your education and your professional background?
Sure. I graduated from Smith College, received an MA from Mount Holyoke College, and a PhD in philosophy from Columbia University. I taught philosophy at Wellesley College, Howard University, the Extension Division of the University of Virginia, and University College at University of Maryland. I left college teaching to have a family and returned to teaching, this time high school English, after taking the necessary courses for certification. I taught at several schools in Prince George's County and Montgomery County in Maryland.
Now, at this point, I always ask the question of every guest, how did Amelia Earhart come into your life? But of course, you're a little bit different from everyone we've ever talked to before, because you have perhaps the most special connection to Amelia Earhart of anyone that we've ever spoken with. For the folks out there who aren't familiar and who may not know, can you tell our listeners out there who Amelia Earhart is to you?
Amelia Earhart, and I'm going to refer to her as A.E., as she liked to be known. She was always in my life because she was my aunt, although I did not know her personally. I was 5 years old when she disappeared. I came to admire her based on the stories my mother told, the books I read, and what I have learned from other sources.
And who, you mentioned your mother, who is your mother?
My mother was a much loved and respected teacher for many years in Medford, Arlington, and Belmont, Massachusetts. After she retired from teaching, she became a civic activist in Medford and was honored for her many contributions to the community.
And what was your mother's name?
Muriel Earhart Morrissey.
Now, I wonder if you could talk to us a little bit about your upbringing. How was Muriel as a mother, and what are your earliest recollections of childhood for you?
I think my upbringing was fairly typical given the time. It was during the Depression, so money was scarce and luxuries were few, but we never went hungry. Children had a lot more freedom in those days. My brother and I played with our friends. We didn't have play dates. We were free to roam all over the neighborhood. We rode bikes, played baseball and football, walked everywhere. My mother's parenting emphasized the values of honesty, fairness, generosity, and loyalty. She raised us pretty much as a single mother because, although she remained married to my father until his death in 1979, he really did not participate in our family life. Although I enjoyed the freedom I was permitted, there was a downside. I knew personally two children who drowned, one in the Mystic River and the other in a pond in West Medford, both near my neighborhood. When I was in second grade, I rode my bike to school and crashed into a moving car, an accident in which I might easily have been killed, but escaped with minor scrapes. Just as A.E. might have been killed when she steered her sled under the junk man's horse's legs when she was sledding on an icy hill. So although I gave my children lots of freedom and encouraged their spirit of independence and adventure, I am keenly aware of the dangers.
Now, Amelia, I know you mentioned earlier in that conversation that you didn't formally know Amelia, but did your mom ever sort of pass any stories off to you about Amelia, about her growing up with Amelia and kind of what they did and how they played together as little girls and all that good stuff?
Oh, yes. I mean, A.E. was not actively involved in my life when I was growing up, but I certainly did hear a lot of stories from my mother.
I know there was one story I wanted to ask you about in particular, and I'm not sure if your mother ever talked to you about it, but that's really kind of a famous story, and that's the roller coaster incident. Did she ever talk to you about the day they built the roller coaster in the backyard in Atchison, Kansas?
Oh, that was a story that was very often repeated. So, yeah, I was certainly really familiar with it. But I'm sorry to say that my mother was not always entirely truthful, and her memory was sometimes faulty. For example, in regard to that story you mentioned, Susan Butler in her book on page 34 and in the notes on page 427, she gives a somewhat different account of the famous roller coaster story. And I'm sure there were elements that were added and maybe some subtracted in the retelling of that particular story. That is, I personally doubt very much that A.E. said, "It's just like flying." I think that was an added embellishment.
So many people really focus on your aunt, on A.E. and what she did with her life. But and of course, she was a fascinating woman and had an incredible career and everything. But your mom was also quite fascinating herself. Can you tell us a little bit about Muriel's, I know you touched on it a little bit, but her professional background and sort of how she spent her professional life?
My mother attended Smith College for 3 years, but lack of money forced her to drop out without graduating. Later, she received her B.A. and M.A. in education from Radcliffe. She taught briefly in California before moving east. During the Second World War, she worked at the Boston Navy Yard, beginning as a tin knocker and ending as an instructor. Of course, she lost her job when the war ended, just as she lost her teaching job in Medford when she married.
So let's take a step backwards and if we can kind of go back to Atchison, Kansas, where your mother and your aunt grew up. I wonder if you can talk about the role that their parents, your grandparents, played in their childhood. Can you tell us a little bit about them?
Well, I really have no idea what kind of parenting my grandparents provided. All I know is what I've read in various books and from the stories my mother told my brother and me when we were children. A.E. and Muriel seemed to have a lot of freedom. They were definitely tomboys who never played with dolls, but instead favored baseball, football, shooting rats, exploring caves, and engaging in highly imaginative adventures in their grandfather's barn. Later, they also enjoyed bicycling, horseback riding, tennis, basketball, swimming, and so on.
So, I mean, Atchison seemed to be a really a big part of Muriel and Amelia, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I know Muriel went back several times and was really quite beloved there from the folks we've talked to in Atchison. Can you tell us what your mom thought of Atchison in general?
Oh, I think she loved Atchison, and she enjoyed returning there later in life. She did live in a number of other places, so it was not as if she spent a great deal of time there as a child.
Now, not too long ago, and I know you and I have talked about this off the air a little bit via email, but I watched a show on Netflix called Amelia, A Tale of Two Sisters. I would recommend everybody, you know, check that out. It's still on Netflix now. And you were featured in it. You're one of the few folks that were featured in it. And it was an interesting look because it sort of covered the life paths that your mother and your aunt took, one very public and one very private, or more private, I should say. Can you talk about the road that your mom took, and did she ever talk to you about that?
Well, I think Ed Cotterill's documentary was excellent, except for one point. It covers AE's life and achievements exceedingly well. It almost totally neglects my mother. My mother always claimed to be happy with her choice of marriage and children, even though I know her marriage was not a happy one. The most she ever said of it to me was, "My marriage was not all I had hoped for." Publicly, she's often quoted as saying things like, "I had two children and she had two airplanes." In a 1937 letter, A.E. wrote of Muriel's, quote, "unhappy domestic situation," but my mother denied the accuracy of that report. Her public achievements as teacher and civic activist fortunately overshadow her private life.
As far as her public, her being a civic activist and doing that, what do you think, what was your mom's really kind of greatest, achievement there? What do you think, what was her proudest moment for that?
Oh, I think her proudest moment was certainly when she was elected to the Medford School Committee. It was probably probably made valuable contributions.
Now, I'd like to talk, if we can, about the relationship that your mom and your aunt had. You mentioned the letters, and they had written each other, back and forth and all that good stuff. But so much has been said about that particular relationship. But I really feel like you might be the best one to talk about it. Can you tell us what kind of relationship they had as they were children? I know they were pretty close, but how did that relationship evolve as they grew older and they took these vastly different paths from each other?
Well, in a way, I'm not the best person to describe A.E. and Muriel's relationship, either as children or as adults. I was not around much of the time when they were both alive. In an article that appeared in a Zonta publication, the article entitled "Memories of Amelia Earhart by her sister, Muriel Earhart Morrissey," she wrote this of their childhood: "No girl is a heroine to her sister. Amelia teased me, ran away from me, and pampered me. Looking back on it, I can see that our kind of play was highly imaginative and distinctly masculine," end quote. As they grew up, their paths diverged, although I think there was always deep love between them. My mother gave A.E. her own savings so that A.E. could buy her first airplane. Later, A.E. and G.P. loaned my parents the money to buy their first house, which sadly they later lost when they could no longer pay the mortgage. My mother followed her sister's career with great interest and always spoke of her with respect and admiration. As far as I can tell, my mother never expressed any resentment or jealousy in regard to her sister's greater fame and fortune. I believe my mother was devastated by A.E.'s death. But in her writing and in the talk she gave, Muriel always focused on A.E.'s achievements rather than on the mystery of her disappearance. I don't think that she, quote, "cheered Amelia from the shadows" is a fair statement. I think Muriel was quite open in her love and admiration for her sister. She certainly expressed this later in her books and her talks.
Can I ask you, Amy, what your favorite memory is of your mother?
My favorite memory of my mother is connected to her friendship with Ann Lindsay, who she met through the church, but who tragically died prematurely. The Lindsays, who had four daughters, owned a summer place in New Hampshire, and they invited our family to spend time there with them. One summer, when no transportation was available, my mother and her children, then somewhere around 10 and 12, packed up and rode their bikes the 75 miles from Medford, Massachusetts, to the Lindsay's place in Stratford, New Hampshire, a ride that included an overnight stop near a chicken farm where we camped but slept little. This was before the days of 10-speed bikes and also before sleeping bags were commonplace. We used blanket rolls that were notoriously inadequate, even for summer nights. My mother also hiked a group of us children up Blue Job, the first mountain I ever climbed, where we slept, again, in our blanket rolls on top of the mountain, edging ever closer to the campfire and burning huge holes in our blankets. My mother was grief-stricken by the death of her dearest friend. Like the death of her sister, it was an event that changed her life.
Now, typically, we wrap up the show talking about Amelia's impact and Amelia's legacy. But since we started the show differently, I'd like to end it differently as well. And the way I'd like to do that is to ask you a two-part question. Firstly, what is the legacy of Muriel Earhart Morrissey, and how do you think she would like to be remembered?
The legacy of Muriel Earhart Morrissey is twofold. First, she was a dedicated teacher who cared deeply for her students and worked tirelessly to make their English classes engaging. She was fair, conscientious, patient, and like all English teachers, overworked and underpaid. Second, she was a dedicated civic activist who worked in many capacities to improve the quality of life in her community. In addition to being elected to the Medford School Committee, she also served on the Conservation Commission and the Council on Aging. She was active in many other groups, including the Pliny Civic Association, League of Women Voters, and Zonta. She was a founding member of the local chapter of the NAACP. Many organizations and institutions honored her during her final years. In 1976, she received the Community Service Award from American Legion Post 45. In 1979, she was named Citizen of the Year by the Medford Chamber of Commerce. In 1984, she was given the Griot Award by Boston College. And in 1986, the Martin Luther King Award from the NAACP. The headlines reporting her death are telling. One read, "Amelia Earhart's less adventurous sister." The other declared, "Medford loses a kind and wise woman." My mother's legacy is her independent spirit, her unfailing optimism, her community service, and her determination to overcome all the hardships and disappointments that life may bring.
And finally, from, in my opinion, perhaps the most important point of view of all, what, in your opinion, is the legacy of your Aunt Amelia?
I believe Amelia Earhart's legacy is this: her adventurous spirit, her commitment to feminism, and her courage as a pioneer in aviation.
Amy, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to do this, and thank you for being a guest on Chasing Your Heart.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
I'm Chris Williamson, and you've been listening to the Chasing Earhart podcast. You can follow the project on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook using the handle @ChasingEarhart. If you haven't yet, go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join me next week as we release two shows for the first time in Chasing Earhart history. We'll break down the summer 2017 trip to Nicomororo with returning guests Dr. Tom King and Andrew McKenna. We'll also sit down with author Rebecca Behrens to discuss her forthcoming book, The Last Grand Adventure. Thanks for listening.